buttons are popping, I guess. I don't know. Wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Especially if you are one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run, we're here for you. Making your life better, we're going to try to help in any way we can, being in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsors this week, Brooklinen, RX Bar, and Hims. They're bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games and their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who's always running circles around me, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
It's only because we're on a track and you're standing in the middle, and I'm just like, I can't. Also, in case our listeners are wondering, Jeff is already humming and whistling Christmas songs, so happy December, everybody.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the holiday season. How could you not whistle holidays? You say that like it's a bad thing.
No, I mean, I was in my Street Fighter Christmas sweater pre-December 1, but like December 1, you walked in and were like, like, just yeah, out of the gate.
You got to have it, man. We put up the Christmas tree last night. I put up half of the lights on our house.
That's all you need. Good. Okay.
couldn't finish the job in time before the sun went down. But I got that staple gun out. I'm stapling my house with lights. It's, you know, it's the most wonderful time. And it is a wonderful time because we have lots of games to talk about. It's going to be a good one. This is a special episode. I have a special recorded tabletop time that we're going to drop in at the end with Actual Lol, John Perkis from Actual Lol. You're going to not want to miss that. It's a special. We're talking about games you should maybe have on your holiday wish list if you're into that, or maybe you want to get for somebody else or just want to play. And on top of everything else, we have a very special guest, a guest who it's often very difficult to have on the show because of time zones. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm so excited because DLC stands for Dorsal Land Contributor, because dorsal is a fin, and from Finland. Wow.
That
right?
is incredible. I was looking forward to that one, but I'm amazed.
We got our friend, you know him from, all over the internet, Daily Tech News show, his own shows. It's Patrick Beja. Hey, Patrick. Welcome back.
Hey, how's it going? I'm so glad you guys adapted to my schedule for me to be able to do the show, given the time difference. I always look forward to the show from the delightfully lovable couple that I prefer on the internet. See what I did there?
Thank you. Nicely done.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be on the show. It's always a pleasure.
Well, we are glad to have you. And let's jump right in. We got stuff to talk about. Let's start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. And you can always submit stories for our consideration or chat about stuff, hang out with like-minded folks by visiting our subreddit. That is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Patrick, you are our guest. You get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
So I have a problem here, kind of a conundrum. I have a story of the week, but it's not in the rundown that you put together. Is that allowed? Is there some kind of law that prevents me from picking another story?
No, this is why we invite folks like you, because you're bringing stuff to the show.
We do this off the top of our head. There's no rundown. Ruin it.
So the story of the week that I'm choosing from my own head is actually the fact that Nintendo has canceled their creators program. They're much, I would say, controversial creators program. I think that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, the Nintendo hammer that has been employed liberally to sort of prevent people from making money off of their IP is being they're loosening it up. They're a kind of just in time for Super Smash Brothers. It's a coincidence, I'm sure.
Yes, of course.
But yeah, this is a huge deal, especially for content creators like ourselves and people on the internet that love to consume content. It has always been a tricky situation with Nintendo because they have been very strict about how you use their IP, but that's all changing, right, Patrick?
Yeah, I think, you know, for those who don't know, Nintendo was possibly the only company in the world, video game company in the world, that didn't allow you to create, like to do streaming or to do YouTube videos for, you know, without paying them for the privilege. And so if you wanted to do that, you needed to enroll in their creators program, and they would take 40% of your revenue on top of what, you know, every other platform already takes. And only then would you be allowed to use their games for your content. And there had always been kind of a, you know, debatable rights or legality about this, because who owns the content that is created? Do you change it enough for it to be fair use, or do they actually still own the intellectual property on the content you create because it's so heavily based on their own intellectual property? I'm sure former lawyer Christian Spicer will be able to clear that up entirely for us, but the fact that they were the only one doing something like this, even though arguably some other companies would have had the right to, and the fact that they have decided to stop means that the issue is kind of actually settled. Maybe not legally, but practically it's settled, because no one is asking anyone for money in order to be streaming games or anything like that. And at some point a few years ago, it was a question. So I think it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, certainly that is the case in the sense that a lot of people looked at Nintendo's position as an antiquated one, that they kind of weren't recognizing the value that streamers bring to their IP. But you could argue that their position could have been one that actually paved the way for more IP holders to have more strict control over their IP and actually monetize it in a way that benefits them and kind of maintains, you know, strict control over their messaging, over how their characters and IP are used. And it could have really created a sea change if they had, you know, forced the issue and more companies had followed suit. You might have seen this be, instead of an antiquated idea, the precursor to something that is a little more a little less liberal as far as what people can create online. But I think you're right. I think them acquiescing to trends really potentially puts this to rest and opens the door for a lot of Nintendo based streamers to, because, you know, like you're talking about with the way the revenue was working, it really was very difficult for anybody to make any money with that kind of a split. So maybe you'll see an explosion of Nintendo content online. I suspect that might be the case.
I think especially with Smash, as you hinted at earlier, this is definitely for Smash. They're saying, and by the way, if you want to know how much the way people communicate or companies communicate is important, I'm sure many people haven't heard about this, because the only way they communicated this was a single tweet on, I don't know, Thursday evening, and that was it. And it wasn't a big deal at all, and they didn't want it to be a big deal. But yeah, I'm sure they didn't make a lot of money themselves, because if they did, they would have found a way to keep it. But certainly this is to encourage people to stream Smash. I'm sure it's 90% for Smash.
Well, Christian, my understanding is that you are currently able to give legal advice, and we should all take it as gospel. And there's no disclaimer needed for you to weigh in on this. That's my understanding, at least.
That's 100% accurate. Yeah, I just reactivated my law licenses before this episode. I had a feeling this topic would come up. So, and I also just took the bar in every state in the United States, too. And I got the results today. Took it today.
Good. Yeah, it's good timing. Good timing.
I passed all of them except for South Dakota, apparently. I don't know what happened there, but everything else, I'm good to go. So if you live in South Dakota, this is not legal advice, but everywhere else. I wonder... I think Smash plays a big part in this. And I also wonder how much time and effort it took to do the accounting for this stuff. I don't know how many people were in the creator program. You know, people certainly were streaming Nintendo games without being in it. And in those instances, Nintendo just claimed copyright and they, you know, ran ads on your content. So people could still have Nintendo content online. You just couldn't monetize it. And I'm sure there were some instances of Nintendo, you know, issuing strikes and putting takedowns out, but it would be out there. It would just be Nintendo running the ad on it. And I wonder the realities of running this program, how many people were in it, who's in charge of all the accounting for giving those 40% and payroll and having records for the creators to then want to see that percentage cut. I mean, it seems like a lot of work.
Poor schmuck in the Nintendo basement was like, please stop it. It's not worth it.
Yeah. He was like, who has to take care of all this accounting? It's a me.
Aww. So I don't know if that was part of it or not, but I imagine it's, you know, a decent amount of work for not a lot of people and or revenue that it's bringing in. And I'm sure, you know, Nintendo takes their time with things. So over the last 10 years, they've realized that streaming in its current form generally is not the enemy. There are always outliers. And how much are you going to fight something, even if it is legally questionable? The case hasn't been tried, and I imagine how long can something happen before you do try that case? And everybody's like, we kind of have let it happen for the last 20 years already. You kind of can't put that back in its can. So I think it's good, though, and hopefully we do see more content coming, and then hopefully we see Super Mario Maker Switch coming also, because that's what we really want, right? That's what we really want.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I think that would be an awesome. I mean, it's perfect for streaming, right? Those, and the fact that this happened during that game's heyday is pretty surprising.
Right.
But yeah, interesting stuff. Christian, what do you got for story of the week?
Okay. Well, I want to talk about two things, but I think we'll get to another one. But we got to talk about Walmart Canada, guys.
They did it again. They are so reliable. I love it. It's the Walmart Canada time of the year. The seasonal leak at Walmart Canada. You can set your watch to it. I love it.
Even Keeley was like joking about Walmart Canada leaking stuff as the Game Awards are what, in 2 days, 4 days, or they're very soon. And he's like, we have some big announcements. We're sure Walmart Canada has their own or something like that. And then sure enough, here they come. I mean, who knows if this is true, but their current leak is they say Death Stranding is shipping in June. Yeah, right. But also Walmart Canada, you know, they could be an analyst, you know, like someone's got to hire Walmart Canada to do all this stuff. Cause that's their latest. There's no way it's coming in June though. Right. Like there's no way.
Okay. So just to catch everybody up in case you were, not paying attention last year, very similar to, well, no, actually it was earlier. It was before E3 last year, right? It was, Walmart Canada.
It was this year's E3. It was Rage 2.
Oh man.
All of those games.
Yeah, that's right. It was this year. I was thinking it was last Christmas again, but no, it was. You're right. It was this year. This 2018 has just felt like it's been 4 years long.
That's what happened. Yeah, and make another kid. Why did you do that, Jeff?
I ask myself that question every day, Patrick. Learn from my lesson, please. Anyway, that's a different topic.
Sorry.
They spoiled a bunch of reveals at E3, including Rage 2 and others, and it was a crazy thing. And now we have this listing in Walmart Canada saying Death Stranding is coming out in June. And I guess somebody from GAF or somebody on Reddit or somewhere like called Walmart Canada and was like, hey, what's the deal with this? And they responded, this is a listing for a game that's coming out in June. So let's just put any stuff to rest. This is pre-orders for a game that will definitely be coming out in June. And I don't know why there's any kind of question about that. And it's like, oh, okay. Thanks, Walmart Canada. So Death Stranding coming out in June. Christian, you remain skeptical. I have been very skeptical that this game would ever be, let alone this June. Patrick, what do you think? Do you think this is accurate? Do you think Walmart Canada does it again? Or do you think this is a placeholder that got blown way out of proportion?
I mean, who am I to disagree with Walmart Canada that has a strong history of proven records?
It's true.
I mean, if it wasn't them, I would have said no way. But yeah, last year's E3 was actually all spot on. So I don't know. And at some point, the game has to ship. And we've been seeing it for, what, 2 years already, pretty extensively? And it seems like it's...
Well, we haven't seen any game. We've seen a walking around, I guess, a little bit.
Death Stranding is the prequel.
I think that's the game, walking around. But it's not prototyping anymore, right? It's things that actually look like they have a little bit of meat on them. So it could be the PlayStation 4 isn't, I mean, the PlayStation 5 we expect is going to be announced next year, we guess.
Not at E3.
Well, I mean,
because Sony ain't coming.
That's true. I mean, yeah, by next year, I mean 2020, because this year is already gone. So next year is the 2019 is the last year to get all of the big things out before, you know, the year of the PlayStation 5, I'm guessing. I don't know. I would give this a 52% chance of being right.
I like it.
If it's like Ground Zeroes, like Death Stranding is Metal Gear, Ground Zeroes, it's a, here's a thing, here's a 3-hour chapter of this game. The big game is coming, and yes, this engine crosses generations, and it will come, you know, 2 years into the PlayStation 5. But, yeah, I mean...
Oh, you think it could be... you're saying it's the prequel. It's the... what's the game that got removed from all the services?
Oh, PT.
PT. Yeah, it's the PT, you think?
No, I'm saying it's the Ground Zeroes.
Okay. All right. So, I think there's a good chance it could come in June if it is a game that is much less complex than a Metal Gear Solid game. Hmm. If it is a game that is a lot, it is a glorified movie. And I mean, who knows? Maybe it is a full-fledged game and they just knocked it out really fast. But I suspect that the game is not as sophisticated a military espionage simulator as his previous efforts have been, and that it is much more concerned with creating this narrative and having you walk around and discover things. And so perhaps that's really all it is. And that's how they can put this game out this quickly.
I think you're right. Especially since he doesn't have the resources of the huge Konami behind him anymore. I'm talking about Kojima, of course. And even though he does have funding, we know that he doesn't have a problem there. I wouldn't be surprised if the game is much smaller in scope, and it might be that it's basically the first game his new studio is going to be putting out could be a smaller thing, still full price.
So here's my follow-up question then, Patrick, do you want it to come out in June? Are you hoping it comes out in June?
I'm not a big Kojima fan, which I realize is kind of heresy to say. I loved the first Metal Gear Solid very, very much, but not the subsequent ones. So I'm not the kind of person who cares enormously about Death Stranding. I'm intrigued, but it's kind of like whatever, a little bit. So, yeah, I'm sorry. I've offended a lot of people in the audience. I apologize.
No, it's an honest reaction. Christian, what about you? Are you hoping June?
I hope it comes when it's ready. We've seen a lot of it. It's been teased and it's weird and no one quite knows what the game is. But yes, if I get another Kojima game and it comes out in June and I've enjoyed all of his other games. So if I get another one of those experiences sooner rather than later and it lives up to the expectations I have for it, I'm all for that. I also like a June release, you know, that summer. I think May has kind of become summer for a lot of these games moving in terms of release dates. But I think June's a great time for a game to come out. That'd be awesome.
Well, it used to be a terrible time for a game to come out because it was right in the middle of E3. But who knows? Maybe E3 is less meaty this year, or that time of year is less meaty. I want it to come out as early as possible so then we can stop talking about this game. I'm being so cynical.
But that's,
I apologize.
That's fair, but it's the case for basically every remaining big PlayStation 4 game, right? Like Last of Us 2.
Well, I'm really excited. Last of Us 2, right, is will continue to be a hot topic for until it's released as well. I'm very excited for Ghost of Tsushima.
That's true.
But, you know, I, I, this game in particular just feels like this laborious, what even is it? And here's another trailer. Here's Kojima trotted out on stage at another thing. And it just feels so exhausting to me to continue just to not know anything about what the heck he's saying. So, yeah, let me play it. I'm ready to play it. Let me play it. If it's done, let's do it. Christian.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to ask you what your other idea, that what your other story that you wanted to bring up.
Oh, I figured you'd bring it up, but I was going to jump in with just a quickie update. I did cancel my PlayStation Classic pre-order. People had been dying to know. I canceled it. That thing looks like a real piece of crap.
Yeah, you plot that on a graph, your excitement level over time. It's a precipitous drop off. You had you really peaked early on the old excitement level.
Yeah. The PAL games, no offense, Patrick. Inclusion of the PAL games.
We wanted the 60-year-old versions. We don't want our own things. They're too slow.
It looks like a real cash in instead of an amazing device that it could have been. So I just wanted to give people that.
But
that's all.
I'm not even sure it's a cash in.
Yes, it is a cash in. It's been put together in like 4 months, and they were like, just put it out, whatever. But to be fair, I think the vision of Sony was no one actually plays those things for more than 15 minutes, and then they display them on their shelves. So who cares how it plays, right?
I think that may be a very astute point. I think that you may be very right about that. That it is, it's a knickknack. It's the functionality is secondary.
Exactly. Well, then make it one of those hot things that keeps my coffee warm. You know, like the disc tray is a little warm coaster.
No, I remember back in those days, they specifically had warning labels. Do not put drinks on this. This is not a coaster.
I know. Imagine now, full circle. It's like, this is for drinks.
Finally. Finally. Everything I wanted to do with my CD disc man, I can do. All right. Well, there's lots to talk about still. Next week is going to be a big one. No offense to Patrick for being here this week. We got a big one coming up this week too. But next week is going to be a little nuts because we got the Game Awards, which is always interesting as far as game reveals. I already know of a couple of games that are being revealed there.
Superman.
Well, that's what we're about to get to. And also kind of funny is doing a big game showcase that is going to have like 60 games, and I don't know what that's going to bring. It's got the first time they've ever done anything like this, so I don't know what kind of newsworthiness, but it sounds like we're going to have a lot to talk about. One of the big rumors heading into the Game Awards was that Rocksteady was going to show off their new game and that game was going to be Superman. Well, not so fast. Sefton Hill, the director and co-founder of Rocksteady, released a tweet squashing the hopes and dreams of many of us, including myself, who were holding our breath for that. He says, looking forward to the Game Awards this year. We're still hard at work in our development bunker, so don't expect an announcement from Rocksteady Games. When it's ready to show, you'll be the first to know. Spoiler, it's not Superman. So that, I think, is pretty extraordinary that not only are they telling us that, you know, don't get excited for a Rocksteady announcement at all at the Game Awards, but the game, when it happens, is not Superman, which I got to say, I applaud that level of, it's easy to play coy and get people excited and then potential disappointment. And, you know, Blizzard tried to do this with Diablo. It's like, we're going to announce something, but it's not four. But they had gone so far down the coy tease line that people didn't really believe them, and it sort of backfired. I love this, that they're just like, it's not Superman. I'm sorry. It's not. I dig that they're doing that. I'm very curious as to what it is, but I'm disappointed that we're not going to find out what it is. It sounds like anytime soon. Patrick, what's your feeling about this squashing of rumors?
What I'm understanding is that it definitely is Superman, right? I read that right.
Right. No, it's going to be Superman, but only for mobile.
Superman Immortal is the way it's going to be.
Yeah,
okay, right.
Exactly.
First of all, communications-wise, yes, managing expectations is important, and they are doing this well, and that's something to be commended. But what we've heard from Jason Schreier is that it's not Superman, but it might be an ensemble of superheroes. So maybe Justice League, so technically a little bit of Superman and everyone else. And it might be a Destiny-like game as a service thing, which I could be excited about. But yeah, I mean, good on them for telling us that it's not going to be announced now, because that would have been the focus of the entire Game Awards, right? I mean, there are two things people were expecting from it. This game and Metroid Prime 4, which I guess might still happen. But yeah, no, it's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm Christian. What do you think about this? Picking up on the Jason Schreier thing, I also would love to talk about the fact that he posted a really interesting thing on Reddit about how he has changed his position on what is newsworthy, and just saying something that's going to be announced later officially by a company, he doesn't really consider newsworthy anymore. Just like beating someone to an announcement just because people want to hear it earlier isn't he considers to be newsworthy. And I actually kind of applaud him for that. I don't know if you want to touch on that as well.
That's an interesting point. I certainly saw his tweet about that. I think there's still a chance that Superman is, I did a dumb tweet where I said, like, excited for your next game. I don't read spoilers. Also, I hope it's Superman. but I think there's still a fair chance that Superman is involved. They did a pretty...
He's just a producer. He's just a... He's got a producer credit, Superman.
He's just laid down the beat. They were...
Sweet Batman track featuring Superman.
Yeah, and he just goes, Superman, like, laid over the bass. When Arkham Knight came out, everybody's like, oh, it's Red Hood. And they were like, this is an all new villain. And everybody's like, Red Hood, you've never seen before. It's Red Hood. And he will blow you away with this original Red Hood villain that is not Red Hood. Red Hood. Spoiler, Red Hood. He was Red Hood. So maybe you're not Superman. Maybe you're the Man of Steel. I think there's still a chance Superman is part of this game, part of this team. I certainly have no inside information. I did call Walmart Canada and they didn't quite understand. They redirected me to underwear.
I don't know. It seems weird to me to say it's not Superman and then have a game with Superman in it, but maybe so. Maybe they're willing to parse it that specifically. You know, I guess, you know, then you could still be surprising people and say, it's not Superman. It's all of the DC superheroes or whatever. I don't know. Whatever it is, I'm sure it's going to be excellent. We're just
it's Kal-El.
Yeah, it's a Clark Kent game is what it is. But I want to kind of just quickly talk about that Jason Schreier thing, because I think it's pretty cool. You know, I'm sort of spoiler averse, generally speaking. And I've often thought breaking news, breaking an embargo for something that is literally like a few days later, weeks later, a month later, is just going to be announced in its official capacity. It doesn't add anything. Just hearing it slightly sooner, but not adding any actual context or insight, it doesn't make it news. And I applaud Jason for that. Jason and I have been talking a long time about him being on the show. I'd love to get him on the show. Scheduling is difficult for him. He has a family as well. So we've had a hard time getting him on, but I would love to have him on to talk about this specifically, because I wish more people would take this approach. I think it's great. If you have something actually some insight into a game or a development process or something, certainly write that story. But just saying, hey, we found out, you know, 2 hours before the big announcement that what the big announcement is going to be, that's not news. That's just ruining an announcement. I don't see how that helps.
He also says, you know, the way he talks about it, you can see he's a little bit conflicted. His position has evolved over time, and he's definitely trying to see the journalistic value in the things he does. He's been a reporter for a long time, and certainly he's become kind of a focal point in the gaming industry over the past year or so. He's broken a lot of news, and he's done a lot of really interesting reporting. I think there has been kind of a trend of associating this, journalists being taken hostage by big corporations and their marketing machine when they sign NDAs. And so should journalists keep the secret that the corporations are giving them? Are they really journalists if they do that? Blah, blah, blah. And I think there's also something to keep in mind, which is, yeah, we're still just talking about video games, right? This is not war reporters or political reporting or anything like that. And you're right. When you, the only thing you do is just telling what's going to happen a week from now, you kind of ruin the surprise and ruin what those people have been working for a really long time. And also, you know, it's true, ruin the marketing effect, the marketing oomph of an announcement, which is important for that company. But just because it's a company doesn't mean you have a duty to ruin their thing, right? So,
well, it's more than that. You're not benefiting the end user in any tangible way. Like ruining that, you can position it as like, oh, it's this marketing, and marketing is inherently evil. And so if you're towing the line for marketing, then you are also evil. Okay. I mean, that's a position that one can take. But I don't think it actually benefits a consumer to know something slightly earlier than the marketing was going to reveal it. Because I think Jason makes a great point. Like if you have some insight, if you have some depth there to reveal it early, and then there's a follow-up to what that is, by all means, that makes it news. But just saying the thing that somebody else is going to say before they can get it out of their mouth doesn't make you a breaking news reporter. It makes you just somebody that heard something slightly earlier. There's no benefit to the consumer for that.
I don't know about it in terms of what Rocksteady is working on in this specific example, but I think generally, or broadly speaking, I would disagree. I think like if you're in the market for a new iPad and they say, hey, they're coming out with new ones a month from now, for sure. Here's the specs. Here's what it is. Or like they're for sure coming out with a new Pro a month from now. That's news. And I'd want to know that.
But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Apple has an event coming up and they're going to announce new iPads. Okay. Here's what the iPad is going to be called.
But Rocksteady has
like, well, they're going to tell you what it's going to be called at the event. Like the fact that Rockstar has a new game, excuse me, Rocksteady, yes. Rocksteady has a new game coming out. We all know that it has a new game coming out. What that game is, you knowing it today or you knowing it when they announce it in a month or 2 months or whatever it is, has no effect on your purchasing decision.
I mean,
right?
I guess maybe some people would think, well, I might, and I mean, I might not buy a game today and save my money for the game that's coming out then. But even then, when it's announced, you still have 6 months from now to save for it. And it's not like an iPad, which is, you know, $500 or whatever. It's $60, so probably a little bit more attainable. And he probably
doesn't know when it's coming out. He just knows what it is. None of the information that he could give you is useful other than knowing it earlier than you would anyway.
I think the most people would agree that there is no inherent value in telling you what you know or in telling you what they know. But I think it stems from that idea that a good journalist wouldn't be quote unquote in bed with the company. And there's a misunderstanding of the functioning of that industry and a thinking that NDAs, for example, are a bad thing because you're selling your silence to the company for access, early access to the game, when in reality, this is how things have to work for a variety of reasons. I'm not going to get into that. But I think that's where it stems from. So people conflate the two and think, oh, but you know something and you're not telling it, so you're kind of guilty of that, of being complicit with the... But, you know, as we've said, I really don't think it's the case here, and it doesn't serve any purpose except, you know, ruining it for... And it does have some negative aspects as well. But I guess the case could be made that it is also beneficial somehow, I suppose, but it would be a hard case to make.
I love Jason and most of his work, if not all of it. And I totally respect his decision, but I also respect the person who gets this information from a source. They're not like just breaking an NDA, but they get this information from a source and decide to release it. I think it is newsworthy. If there was a index card in front of me turned over and it said what Rocksteady's next game is on it, I would look. I would want to know. I'm not saying I would then yell it to the world, but I wouldn't sit there and be like, I'll wait for Rocksteady to announce it. I'd want to know. That's the type of person I am. I looked for Christmas presents in closets when I was younger. So I totally understand and respect the person that gets this information and finds it newsworthy and, you know, tweets out and maybe does then some reporting around it to learn about why it's not a Superman game, blah, blah. Like, I think there can be a story there.
He addresses that. If there is more than just, you know, the reveal of what it is, then he says, yeah, maybe then there's some value to it.
I think you made the perfect analogy, though, Christian, because I just really want Christmas to be awesome. You know, like I'm ready for me opening a present on Christmas. I've never, when I was a kid, looked for my presents. I don't want to know. I'm not going to get that present any earlier just by knowing what it is earlier.
Are you going to watch the Game Awards?
Well, but the Game Awards are
those unveiling. Why not just wait for the game to come out and be like, whoa, you walk into Best Buy and you're like, whoa, there's a game out.
That's not, I mean, they crafted that messaging. That's the part of, but I do feel that way a lot. That's how I deal with movies. That's what I do with movies. I don't want to know what the movie is about until I sit down to watch it. So that's a whole other rabbit hole I've gone down.
But I mean, I do think there is value in, anyway, it's all a matter of opinion, but it's fun to get it from the horse's mouth and to get it the way it's supposed. I mean, when you go into E3, if you know every game that's going to be announced, it's less fun. It's just less exciting, yes. Right? The big press conferences.
So, but how fun was that week when Walmart Canada was leaking everything? There's still fun to be had. You got to take all your fun and put it in a high-quality canvas bag and take it with you.
Yes, that too. We have to talk about that. But imagine how more exciting it would have been, the Bethesda conference would have been, if we didn't know Rage 2 was coming. That trailer would have been a lot more fun. Now it was just, oh yeah, it's Rage 2, whatever. It's
we're
not saving the world here, right? We're not reporting on war or, you know, some kind of huge political thing. It's okay to let people, like, you're not fighting for the great cause by revealing the thing that you know about the game that's coming out. So that's also,
I agree. I've been beating that drum for many years, and I understand for a lot of people, video games is the most important thing in the world, but it really isn't. And all of the, you know, all of the self-importance in the world, and people accuse me of being a shill or whatever because of that position. But I don't think that's the case. I know that's not the case for me, and I don't think that's what it means when you say, "Hey, I get excited for the things to be revealed in a cool way, like." I don't need the story that posts, you know, 2 hours before the press conference of what the press conference is going to be. It's like, why do I care 2 hours before? I can just watch. Anyway, we beat this horse to death. Christian wants to talk about canvas bags. I want to tell you about our first sponsor, which is Brooklyn. You don't want to sleep in a canvas bag. You want to sleep in the amazing sheets. And that's what Brooklyn has. I have Brooklyn sheets. I am so, so happy. I was thinking about this last night as I went to bed, because I knew we were recording today and I knew I had a Brooklyn and sponsorship to talk about. And I was like, I just kind of want to luxuriate in my sheets just to really soak in the experience. They're very nice, you guys. They are very nice sheets. And I am a person that did not put enough emphasis on how good my sheets were for far too long in my life. These are the winner of the best online bedding category by Good Housekeeping. They're very high quality, but they're not the kind of high quality that's going to make you spend a fortune, because they're sold directly to you over the internet. It's pretty awesome. You spend a third of your life in your sheets sleeping. Why not upgrade your bedding? Holiday season, perfect time for a bedding upgrade for you or a loved one. Maybe you want to give this for your special someone. Give yourself or them the feeling of a 5-star hotel sheet by upgrading to Brooklinen. These are amazing. I love my sheets. And we can get $20 off and free shipping when you use promo code DLC at brooklinen.com. And Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all their sheets, comforters, and towels, they do towels too. Oh, I got to get some Brooklinen towels. I need a new towel. I love a big, comfy towel. I'm going to have to look into this. They all come with a lifetime warranty. Lifetime warranty. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code DLC at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com. Promo code DLC. Brooklinen. These really are the best sheets ever.
Also, real talk, if you're watching the live stream, there's a picture. At least when I got mine, they really do come in a canvas bag. It's like a real
They don't
nice
feel
bag.
Like a canvas
no,
bag.
No, I'm saying the sheets come in a bag, like a real right. bag. Right. Unlike some things that don't come in a nice bag.
Well, Christian is referring to all of the great publicity surrounding Fallout 76. It just keeps on coming. Bethesda knocking it out from a PR perspective. Fallout 76, the Champion Edition, Complete Edition? What does the C stand for?
Collectors?
Collectors Edition, of course.
Carry it everywhere edition?
Power Armor Edition.
Power Armor yeah. Edition, indeed. That's right. If you bought the Power Armor Edition for $200, woo, that means you get a whole bunch of garbage to put in your house. You get a whole bunch of wonderful little things, including a bag. And in the picture of the Power Armor Edition, it really looked like it was a canvas bag. It looked like a very nice bag.
It stated it was a canvas bag.
It said the word
then.
Canvas. Yeah, it yes. looked canvasy. It said canvas. Turns out, not so much. Nylon kind of crappy bag is what showed up when people bought it.
Also late. This edition of the game, they got a lot of players got codes so they could play the game at release. This big version shipped, I think it was a week later, or arrived a week after the game was out.
Yeah.
They didn't want people to hear about this as the game was coming out. They right. had enough problems.
Yeah, they didn't want to get in the way of all that great publicity they were getting from the game itself. The Bethesda Gear Store responded to some angry customers who were unhappy with their bags, saying, sorry, it was too expensive to make that one. What do you expect for $200? They said
and
it was
also,
a prototype.
We're
a
not going to do anything about it. Like,
They originally said we're not doing anything about it. They had then or subsequently changed their tune and have given people in-game dollars, in-game real-world money, fake money that works in the game, but you buy that fake money for real money. 500 atoms is what they're giving everybody who bought that game. 500 atoms, it sounds like a lot. It sounds like so many atoms. Turns out 500 atoms is $5. So you spent your $200 hoping to get your sweet bag, and they give you $5 in-game money. The real kicker here for me is that there's a digital skin in the game that's wearing the canvas bag from the Power Armor Edition. That skin, 700 atoms. So you can't even buy the fake digital version of the bag with the money they gave you as a sorry.
Brutal.
For the real version of the bag. Christian, I know you were delighted by this all week. Tell me, I'm not delighted, that's the wrong word, but you found this very humorous.
I feel bad. Like, I have indulged in some collector's editions over the years. We've certainly had highs and lows. I have over on my shelf my Horizon Zero Dawn, and I think she's a very nice sculpt. I'm very pleased with that one. I remember the Marvel versus Capcom Infinity Stones, man, those looked great in the pre-release images, and they came out and they were like just half of an Easter egg glued into a thing. Like, yeah. Look that up if you haven't seen it. Just utter garbage. And the problem is for Bethesda, well, right now, unfortunately, Fallout 76 has a share of problems, but the Pip-Boy they did for Fallout 4 was awesome. Like, they've yeah. done some really great.
The cat helmet. Didn't they do a cat helmet?
No,
once?
It was Halo. I don't think
I
they've
know
done.
Halo did a cat helmet, but didn't they also do a power armor?
That's what
helmet?
This is. This is an actual.
Oh, it has a helmet too.
Yeah, and the helmet itself is supposed to be pretty good. But Bethesda's done some great big collector's editions before. You know, I remember this isn't Bethesda, but like other ones that didn't go well. BioShock, they sent out like a cheap Big Daddy and everybody's was broken, and it was just like the most fearsome villain in this game, and it was just like this crumpled thing in a box when it showed up. And so it's unfortunate that people that clearly you'd assume are the biggest fans of this game and this franchise are getting a game that has had two letters sent out, you know, saying, hey, there's a problem, sorry. And then, you know, you probably weren't buying this for the bag. You were probably buying it for the helmet and the map and you kind of everything. But it does suck that you have this, like, a nylon bag. Let's not get it confused. I mean, that is a plastic grocery bag that they don't even allow in California anymore, right? I mean, this, it's not like, it's still nice. It's not. It's not.
Yeah. The crappy part is the bait and switch of the pictures and the messaging. That really feels like,
yeah,
you should be ahead of that as a company. If that's what you're showing to people as part of your marketing for investing in the big gaudy edition of the game, you got to at least be ahead of it and say, hey, you know, there's been some change. Just want you to know.
Yeah.
Not after the fact go, meh, we weren't. And, you know, it's not the fault of the
apology. Like, right. The quote unquote apology, I'm doing the air quotes here, but it, like, your response to this is, yeah, sorry, it was too expensive.
I feel like that's not fair. That's some person that was working at the store. Yes, they should know better than to say that, but they're not in the loop. That's some low level person.
That's still the response that stands. The other one is, oh, we'll give you $5 of in-game currency, which is, I don't think, I mean, yes, as Christian said, it's like the main item is the helmet and all of that. But I guess this coming on top of the issues with the game itself makes it all the more stingy. And that's really what the story is that Bethesda with Fallout 76 has not done a great job. I mean, there are a few people who really like this game. Good friend Nicole Spag is one of them. And she told me how much she loves it, that she doesn't understand all the hate. But, okay, on the other hand, whenever, you know, Starfield comes out or Elder Scrolls 6 comes out, all of this will be forgotten.
That's
but still, it's a misstep for Bethesda. And the most significant thing is they have a lot of brand loyalty and of brand goodwill. And I think this is the biggest damage they have done to their own brand since, you know, forever.
Yeah. I agree. And, you know, when you're awarding people in-game currency, that costs you nothing. Why not give them something substantial? You know, it really, I think the actual cost to the company is probably very minimal if people are spending it on digital skins and stuff. Just
and don't even
give them in-game currency. Give them a serious amount, you know?
And don't have to give them currency per se, because that could affect the game in terms of, like, you can also buy a barn door with your 500 atoms. And since it is online, but give them skins then. Don't let them spend it on things that might affect an online game
Do let them do that. They spent $200 on your game. Let them. Just let them do that. Anyway. All right. Well, let's move on. We got games to talk about. So let's jump right into the playlist. Lots of stuff to talk about this week. I'm excited, Patrick, to get your opinion on a lot of the big games of the moment. But let's start in a different place, because a game that I keep thinking that I need to play before the end of the year. We've heard some people on the show recommend it before, and I see it on your playlist, Return of the Obra Dinn. Are you as much of a cheerleader for this game as others?
In a sense... it's getting to that time where I'm seeing my giant list of games I haven't played for the year that people are praising, and that I'm, you know, I have to play to at least, you know, for an hour or two to have an idea of what they are. And certainly Return of the Obra Dinn is something special. It is a different experience, both for, you know, visually, and people have spoken about this to death. But also, I think something that has been talked about a little bit less is the narrative aspect of the game is really interesting. Again, people have heard what the game is about. There's essentially an investigation on a boat, and you have this stopwatch that shows you moments of people's deaths as a kind of diorama where you can walk around in a frozen moment in time. And this is not just for the benefit of the investigation. It's also telling the story of what has happened on that boat. And I'm not sure how far you can go without actually solving the puzzle pieces. But I think this game might actually be a fine walking simulator type of thing. And the way it tells the story is really interesting, because you understand everything that happened on that boat through, like, it's not chronological. You jump in time in different position, you know, portions of the story. Mostly you go back in time. You start with the end and you see what's led to all of these crazy situations. And it just has this diorama and a few seconds of dialogue before the moment of the person's death. So it tells the whole story like this. And that aspect alone is kind of interesting. And I think that hasn't been talked about all that much. The puzzle part I'm not hugely in love with, but I think this aspect of it is something really new and different and that has never quite been done that way. So I think there's value to it. I don't think it's my type of game, so I'm probably not going to find the time to go to the end. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely something that I would recommend to play just for the kind of general culture, gaming culture value that it has.
So intrigued by it. I'm gonna have to pick it up in the next week or so. I'm just so intrigued by it. I don't know if it's going to be the kind of game that will click with me, but I guess that's why you try things. I'm hopeful, but I definitely, if I hadn't heard everybody talk so highly of it, it really wouldn't have been the kind of thing I would gravitate to, for a number of reasons, but I'm so curious about it. And several people who've played it said that I will love it, that know me. So maybe I'll like
it. So I would say, even if you don't love it, it's the kind of game that is so different and interesting that it's probably a good idea to have an idea, you know, what it's about. Kind of like, you know, Lucas Pope's previous game, Papers, Please, even if you don't go to the end of it, it's kind of interesting for, as a game connoisseur, to have tried it.
Yeah. Again, that's Return of the Obra Dinn. Let's talk a little bit about Red Dead Redemption 2. Everybody loves talking about that game. I know both of you guys have played more of it this week. Patrick, are you on the proverbial Western train?
It's almost kind of like Return of the Obra Dinn. There are aspects of it which I think are incredible and aspects of it which I really don't like. So it's kind of, I'm forcing myself to play it a little bit more, but I don't think I'm going to finish it before the end of the year. And it's spectacular in all the ways that people describe it being spectacular, and disappointing in all those ways as well. So I'm not on that train. But again, I think it has enormous value for the medium. I'm just not sure it's a very good game.
We get that a lot. I've been trying to find a purely positive voice on this game, because I've gotten so many emails of people who are frustrated that we haven't heard more positive about it. But I'm in that boat too. I know, Christian, you're definitely more positive than it sounds like either of us are. Are you? You played relatively little of it, but I know you played more this week.
Yeah, I put another 2 hours in. I love it. I keep thinking about it, wanting to find time to play more of it. I just want to have at least an hour to sit down and play, kind of like a committed hour. My wife is going to be out of town the back half of this week, which means I'm at home after the kids go to bed, which means Dad's going to the wickety, 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 wickety Wild Wild West is where I'm going. I'm very excited.
Sweet contemporary reference there.
Hey, if Will Smith can cry talking about the relationship with his oldest son, I can quote a rap line from one of his worst songs from one of his worst movies. Okay.
Fair enough.
I'm very excited to play more of it. I'm taking my time with it. I love it. I think it's the type of game that struggles, people might be struggling with today, because there are so many good games and internet culture, part of which I and we with this show play into, of like, here's the new thing, here's the latest thing. Oh, you haven't played Tomb Raider yet? You got to play Tomb Raider. It's incredible. Oh, Return of the Obra Dinn? You got to play that if you like game. I know I'm paraphrasing and overemphasizing things, but it's this, you know, you can fall into this thing of, wait, you haven't even played the new Street Fighter V patch yet? There's a new character in Overwatch, and you can't possibly keep up with everything, even if you try. But I think Red Dead Redemption 2 is this game where it's like, hey, do you have 500 to 1,000 hours? Go live in the Wild West. Yeah. And you might not beat it in those 500 hours. Like, what I find awe-inspiring about it, but also a little overwhelming from my anxieties, is that it's not like Horizon Zero Dawn or Assassin's Creed Origins or Odyssey, where my map isn't littered with things to do. Sometimes there's one thing. And again, I'm early, so I don't know how this changes in Chapter 5 or whatever. But like, there's like a thing that's marked as the thing to do, and it's far away. And I could just ride, hold A and ride there to go do that thing. And then, but that's boring. And then you're just holding A for an hour and you're like, well, this is a waste. Or you just go live as a cowboy. And I spent 2 hours in a town. And one time something awesome happened. I had this fun story. The other time nothing happened, but I cleaned my guns twice. It's just this world where people are interacting, talking to each other. The characters start to mean more as you spend more time with them. And I really do think it rewards that investment of slowing down, you know, drinking iced tea on your porch in the summer and not being worried about what's on Twitter or did you do this? Did you do that? And I think to me, Red Dead Redemption 2 feels like a book in a world of Twitter and binge watching Netflix shows. It doesn't care. It's not trying to help you finish it. It just live it. And I really enjoy it. I don't know if I'll ever finish it because I don't know if I have those 1,000 hours. But so far, I really love my time in the world.
The way I describe it is not a game. It's an Arthur Morgan simulator. That's what this is. And, you know, I said I don't really like the game. I still played it for like, I don't know, 25 hours. But most of that was just walking around and looking for things to hunt. And it's an incredible experience. But I also started playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and playing that after having played Red Dead Redemption 2 is kind of a weird experience. I love it. I think Assassin's Creed Odyssey is a way better game than Red Dead Redemption 2. It's amazing.
Before we get to that, I love the transition, but I wanted to read an email that we got about Red Dead. Believe me, I'm happy to talk about Assassin's Creed Odyssey until the cows come home. But I appreciate what you guys have been saying, and I've been getting a lot of emails about it as well. This is one of my favorites, and this is one of the ones that made me go, you know, I really do feel like maybe I'm missing something by not putting time into Red Dead now. This comes from Eric Fredrickson. He sent it into dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It's a rather lengthy email. I'll read just a couple of my favorite parts. He's responding mostly to the long 50-minute discussion that Dave Chen and I had, I think a couple of weeks ago now, about Red Dead Redemption 2. He says, it was a pretty long chat. Thank you for the extra podcast minutes. So there's definitely stuff I meant to also mention that I'm forgetting, but I wish Dave had been able to describe what it's like to stand on the shore next to that lighthouse and fish for muskie in the fog, or to spot an owl's eyes in the trees through my binoculars. When you take a bath, you can have a woman bathe you. It's kind of weird, but later in the game, if you do that, Arthur might tell the woman about his, spoiler alert.
Don't spoil.
Okay. About something from his life. And she just goes, I don't know what to do with that. And it's so perfectly awkward. It's funny and sad in all the right ways. The stranger missions aren't all fun, but some of them are a blast. You can find a woman up in the mountains who lost her husband in an animal attack and try to help her become self-sufficient. You can go fishing with a war vet who knows his stuff and loves to chat. If you explore, you can find truly weird Easter eggs, a giant skeleton in the mountains, a house belonging to a certain top-hatted NPC from the first Red Dead Redemption. Seriously, look up the video for that. It's chilling. I'm not trying to say you should like the game. I think you might, but I know how it is. Once I've decided I don't want to engage with something, you can't make me. I still haven't read Harry Potter or played Pokemon. And I don't think your experiences or Dave's were invalid, but I think a stand-in for the usual Jeff Cannata positivity would have made for a more balanced conversation that fits the tone of DLC better. So I really appreciate that, Eric. And I don't mean to not have positivity. Clearly, Christian is very, very positive about the game. And I know that as he continues to play more, we'll talk about it more. And I'm sure you'll hear more of that on the show. I certainly didn't intend to have only negative views of the game. And I'm really moved by your little bits that you've chosen to highlight in your email. I think it's great. And those things do make me feel like I'm missing out on something. I just am prioritizing a different kind of entertainment right now, I think. And I think that's fair, you know.
Can I share one short little just kind of, I think, random kind of encounter that happened when I was playing Red Dead here this week?
Yeah.
So I'm on the edge of this bluff looking down and kind of just taking in the vista because I think the scenery and landscape is gorgeous. And as I'm sitting there, occasionally in the game, you'll hear people calling out for help. And then a little, you know, white dot will show up if they're near you. And so I hear this and someone's like, help me, help me, help me, help me, help me. And they're carriage, horse-drawn buggy or whatever, was kind of in a precarious position over close to me, but still over kind of on this bluff. And I don't know if it was going to fall or what was going to happen, but this man was calling for help. So as I'm walking over there, I have to cross over this little bit of a stream to get to his section. And when I went into that, cross the stream, I was in an area that I had a bounty on me because I was bad. And I get over there and I'm helping this person, and this other person is coming over, like riding along the path as well. And I'm like, what? Everything's gonna be fine. And this person, as they're riding up, as I'm getting off my horse and coming over, and you hold left trigger to engage. And I'm like, greet. I want to be friendly with this person. It's like, oh, hey, what's the trouble, partner? What's going on? He's like, oh, help, my horse is stuck. Can you help me get out? And this other person coming down the hill, and he calls out from far away. It's, I'm paraphrasing, but something like, you know, what's the issue? Y'all okay? And rides down and gets closer and he goes, wait, I know you, and pulls his gun. Then the person I'm helping goes, wait, what? I don't want any of this, and runs away, leaving his horse. So I went to try to help someone, another NPC who doesn't apparently know who I am, who's also maybe coming to help this other NPC, recognizes me because I'm in a bounty, pulls his gun on me. We start fighting. This other person then runs away, leaving his possessions that he cared very much about, you know, scripted before that. And I end up killing this other person and then looking around with no one else there and then robbing this guy's carriage and going about my business. Amazing gameplay loop. Cool, fun moment that I don't know. Has anyone else had that? Email us and let us know, because it felt so organic and random that I don't know if I would have seen it, but for sitting at this vista for 2 minutes to watch the sunset.
But I think the issue with the game is that everything we're all describing as positive is the world, not the gameplay itself. The gameplay is Red Dead Redemption 1 gameplay, or even, you know, earlier than that, from 5 or 10 years ago, and it's dated. And I think that is what a lot of people have an issue with. But the game, the it's
in what,
more...
in what sense? I want to drill down on that, because Blackout, Call of Duty is still left trigger, right trigger. This is, it has heavy auto aim, which you can turn off. It has a small, you know, I guess I wish that they used Max Payne 3 shooting and cover mechanic a little bit, but the game is a slow paced game where I'm manually reloading the carbine in my rifle after 2 shots, because that's the type of gun I'm using. I'm not wall running and jumping off. This isn't Titanfall 2. Like, How is this gameplay dated, and what do you think you should be doing in it that the game isn't offering?
It's clunky. It's like you walk around, you don't stop where you want to stop. When you start running, you don't quite run. Like when you want to open a drawer, you have to move the your character 15 times before you're exactly at the place you need to be to press the right button. It's all of those things that don't feel natural. You fight the movement system, the gameplay system, you fight it in order to achieve what you want to achieve. I think that's games have evolved, and yes, Call of Duty is the same as it was 10 years ago because it was already great. Red Dead Redemption 1 and Grand Theft Auto 5 weren't great, and they still aren't, and not in that way. There are other things that are good, but that's, I think.
Yeah, I feel like I haven't struggled with that stuff, and maybe I'm a Red Dead apologist, but I feel like I haven't.
You're such a shill, Christian, for Red Dead.
I'm such a shill. That I haven't struggled with not being able to pick up the thing I wanted to pick up occasionally, you know, navigating around a table in a small building, but it hasn't been anything more egregious than I've experienced in other games. I think times where I find I am frustrated is if I'm trying to rush through something. But I have to remind myself that that's not what Red Dead is. Red Dead isn't a game that you rush through experiences. You don't rush through searching through a house. I mean, Jeff mentioned it. It's a very early mission where if you stop to search every dead body along the way, the game, the train literally leaves. You can't. It's not that type of game, because you will stop and...
It's not that it's not that type of... I mean, we could do a whole show about Red Dead Redemption 2, and I'm sure, you know, books will be written about this game because it's so different. That has never been done before, and I'm not sure it serves gameplay. It serves immersion. It serves the building of the world, but it doesn't make for a fun, necessarily for a fun game. It makes it more realistic, but I'm not sure that's a positive thing. And when I was going to talk about Assassin's Creed, it was to say it Assassin's Creed feels like a toy. You know, everything is so gamified.
Yes.
Red Dead Redemption 2 feels like a world you're inhabiting. And that's a great artistic thing. I'm just not sure how great of a game it makes. It still has value, but, you know, and I can love that aspect of the game and dislike another aspect. And it's still, you know, the artistic value is still huge, probably higher than almost any other AAA or quadruple A game that has ever been created. And still, other aspects are lackluster, I think.
I think that, you know, Dave made a good point on our sort of bonus episode that he was talking about it in terms of simulation, that it's in this uncanny valley of simulation that even as it approaches a more a closer to real life attempt at simulation, it gets farther away. That yes, it would actually take this, you know, take longer to search a person than in Assassin's Creed, where you can literally loot something as you gallop by on your horse, you know, but just because it's attempting to do that doesn't mean it's still not abstracting other things. So, for example, you have to sit through the animation of skinning a rabbit or a deer or whatever it is when you're skinning. But also, if you were in the Wild West, you wouldn't skin 27 deer in a day, right? Which you can do if you decide to, and because it's a video game, right? So you're still abstracting the experience of living in the Wild West. And I say, if you're going to abstract it, why not abstract it to my benefit, to me as a player's benefit? Like, I don't want to have to get down, pick up a guy, go through his pockets, find the thing. I do want the thing.
How long have you played it?
I did 10% of the, whatever 10% was. Okay, so I did 10% of the game.
Three hours, because it goes really fast in the beginning.
Yeah, I'm not very far at all. I made a decision very early on not to stop.
For the first 3 hours, 5 hours maybe, I hated the game. I thought it was ridiculous, and all of those things you're describing affected me very much. And I think this game doesn't care about what you like or what you want. It forces you, it tells you, as Christian was saying, to slow down and to inhabit the character. And when I did that, when I understood that, when I accepted it, and maybe not everyone has to accept it, but when I did, I saw the value in that, because you're saying, oh, it should be abstracted to fit me and to make it easier. But
I'm not saying it should. I'm saying that. I prefer that.
Right.
I prefer that.
But every other game already does that. And this is the first time we're trying to clumsily, but someone is trying to make it. No, we're going to do it the way it would actually be. And yes, there are clunky things. Like, for example, you're saying it's realistic, but often when you're opening a drawer, it's actually slower than if you actually did it in real life. Like, you move over, open the thing, look at like, it's actually ridiculously slow. But I still think this is an interesting original approach that has value. And in doing so, most people, even the people who don't like the game, seem to agree that it creates a different and special experience that no other game creates. I certainly agree.
I agree as well. Please don't interpret what I'm saying as not understanding that. I admire this game very, very much. I've long had a little phrase that I like to use where I call games more fun than they are good. I think this game is the inverse of that, right? This game is more good than it is fun. And that's fine. Like, I appreciate that. I admire it. I'm in awe of this game in many ways. It just, I have to talk myself into playing it. And that's all. And again, this comes down, fundamentally, it comes down to different strokes for different folks. Like, I love that people love this game, and I love reading emails like Eric's where people are finding these magical moments in it, and I do feel like I'm missing out. And maybe I will come back to this game at a certain point, but I am having so much more fun in games like Assassin's Creed that I think about when I'm not playing. And like Christian's describing Red Dead Redemption 2 for him, I'm thinking about ACO when I'm not playing it. I can't wait to scrape together a few minutes just to jump back in that world.
So. It's the game equivalent of, I love you, I just don't like you right now, or like you at all.
Right. Kind of. Right. Anyway, so you're digging Odyssey.
Yeah. I mean, we've already spoken a lot about a lot of things, so I've just got to go very quickly to say, a lot of people have taken a lot of, care in speaking about Assassin's Creed Odyssey in a way that is, you know, careful to point out its flaws. And that's fair, but it gave me the impression that the game wasn't great, you know? I didn't get an accurate impression of what the fun and the complexity that is crammed into this experience. And I ended up getting it for Black Friday. It was like 40 bucks on PSN. And I tried it, and I didn't like Assassin's Creed Origins, so I didn't have a lot of hopes. And I ended up loving it, and it's fun to play. The gameplay is engaging. It's easy to get into after having played 25 hours of Red Dead Redemption 2. I was like, oh my God, this game is actually giving me the fun. I don't have to fight it to get to the enjoyable part. And it keeps adding system upon system upon system. You never have a moment to not have something to do. It's a great game. I was surprised I'm enjoying it so much. It's really a great game.
The thing I love most about it is how much it always rewards my curiosity. If I'm curious about something, I see something, I'm going to go look at it. There's always something cool there. If I find an amazing vista and I dive off of it and I land in a tiny pool of water, chances are at the bottom of that water, there's a chest that's just there. The game isn't signposting it in any way. It's just there waiting for me to discover it. And there's some cool loot in there or loot that I can just sell, whatever. The fact is, my curiosity of diving off the thing and B, going a little bit deeper in the standing water that I found is rewarded. And it's always the case. If there's a cave, I'm going to go to that cave and there'll be something cool in that cave. Always. Even if it's not one of the big landmark caves, if it's just some random cave place, some random thing I find, there's always something waiting for me to reward my curiosity. And I just adore that. The game feels massive and yet handcrafted at the same time. And I just can't believe it.
I think the structure, the geography of it, the island, the Greek islands, make for an easy encapsulation of all of this, because every island is kind of its own independent story. And so you go there and you feel like you've completed something. There's definitely a little bit of an issue with the amount of money and experience you get. Sometimes you can't continue on the main quest. And there's this whole issue with the microtransaction, XP boost thing, which again could be debated, because if they had given you enough XP by just doing the main quest, then you would never do the side quests. But the microtransaction existing kind of begs that question. But
it's funny. It's funny that that whole thing happened, and I wish I'd known about it when we were talking about that issue. But I just got to a part in the game the other night that is literally the game making fun of microtransactions. There's a sequence where you get to this island and it's all about the Minotaur, there's a bunch of people on the island who are like trying to make money off the Minotaur. And if you want to fight the Minotaur, you have to go through these trials, and each of the moments of the trial, they go, "Hey, if you just want to pay 1200 drachmi, we'll let you go through the trial without having to even do it." And then if you do pay, they go, "Pay to win? You're going to pay to win? Oh, that's so pathetic." It's like the game totally commenting on it. So I thought that was pretty funny that they were subject to their own – the thing they mocked, they were actually accused of too. Anyway, let's talk also – I don't know if we've ever talked about Donut County on this show. I talked about it, I think, at E3 last year when I played it. But it's out and a lot of people love it. It's an odd, odd game about holes. Right?
Yeah, it's so weird. It's essentially a game where you play a hole in the ground and everything falls into it. You make things fall into it, and the more things fall into it, the bigger the hole gets, so you can make more things fall into it. Like, this is the entirety of the gameplay. Well, there are a few different things, but essentially this is the gameplay of that game. It, of course, people will be reminded of Katamari Damacy. There's the same kind of feeling to it, but that's what I knew going in. What I didn't know, and I only played for maybe an hour or two, but what I didn't know was, man, this game is dark. Like, it is, it manages to feel so, like, the metaphor of the bottomless pit swallowing everything in the world is like they push on that so much. And it's all cutesy graphics and like the cutesy characters and are talking amongst themselves, but it literally makes you feel like the world is an endless pit of darkness, and everything.
Oh, goes I don't need a game to teach to have me feel that way. I just have to turn on the news.
Yeah, well, essentially, maybe it was inspired by that. But yeah, that was the thing I did not expect about Donut County. It's a very, I don't know how, you know, maybe it becomes super teary towards the end. But the beginning was like, I almost didn't want to play it because it made me feel bad.
Yeah, that's funny. Mm. Interesting game, though. Very interesting game. Let's take a quick break and thank our second sponsor, which is RX Bar. Oh, man, I really dig RX Bar. I've bought several boxes for myself since they became a sponsor. I hadn't tried them until they were. They sent me a few free bars, and I got hooked. Now I buy them myself because they're so good. I'm somebody that exercises a lot, and I enjoy protein bars. I'm also somebody that's lazy and doesn't like to – you know, have breakfast. I run out of the house. I'm late and I don't have time for anything. And so I love having, you know, compact, easy to eat on the go foods, but I rarely like how they taste. RX Bar is my favorite of these I've ever had. Not a joke. Completely honest telling you that. I love the texture. I love the flavor. They have amazing flavors. My favorite are the berry ones. They have a mixed berry and a blueberry. Those are great. But they have chocolate ones and peanut butter ones. And these are bars that actually are made with real ingredients. These are all the ingredients are printed right on the packaging. It's because they know that you don't want garbage in your food. You don't want to be, especially if you're, you know, health conscious, you don't want to be putting in your body all of these additives and stuff. These are real ingredients. They're gluten-free, they're soy-free, they're dairy-free. There's no artificial colors or flavors or preservatives or fillers. What's in the bar is on the packaging. It's great. Works awesome to just toss in your bag and have with you if you need a pick-me-up snack or breakfast on the go. And you can get 25% off your first order of the bestseller variety pack. Just go to rxbar.com/DLC and enter promo code DLC at checkout. This is valid in the U.S. only and for a limited time. So sorry, international listeners, but give it a shot. 25% off your first order of the variety pack. That's rxbar.com/DLC and promo code DLC. I really, really enjoy these bars. I've been buying them and enjoying them. So I think you should check them out. All right, Christian, you've been playing some more Pokemon. I've seen you sitting around with the little Pokeball and shaking it vigorously. Are you still loving that game?
If Donut County is showing you the black hole that is life, Pokemon Let's Go is such a cheery alternative. It's just my happy place. It's something that literally is so pick up and playable. Yes, I have the Pokeball Plus too expensive version, and I still love using that little thing. Yeah, I put Pokemon in it. I take my dog for a walk while I take my Eevee or my Mew for a walk. Recently I've had my Pikachu in there. They're getting XP while I'm getting healthy. There we go. That works. It's such a delightful game. I think now I'm 14 hours in, just chugging away, no real end in sight per se. And what I really love about it are all of the slick little transitions that happen. So cut has been a feature in Pokemon before. You know, the little branches, and you kind of get through them. In this game, it is assigned to your partner Pokemon, either Eevee or Pikachu. And so when you get to a small little branch, it's in the path. Metroidvania-esque, if you've played Pokemon, you know what I'm talking about, how the map opens up. Don't think that this is a deep Metroidvania-type re-explore game, but there are certain areas of towns and areas on the map you can't get to until you learn new skills later. And Cut is one in this game, in this reimagining of first-gen Pokemon. And now when you go to it, because it's assigned to, I have the Eevee version, you get this nice little Saturday morning cartoon-esque microsecond cutscene, or it's like, do you want to cut this twig? Yes. And then Eevee's like, woohoo! And she flies across, and the style and pizzazz in those little moments are just, they're astounding. When you battle a Team Rocket person, which you get to do a lot, thankfully, the little animation that shows there with the red R and the way it kind of drops and flies away into the distance with this solar system-esque background just screams cartoons from when I was a kid. And that kind of stuff, the polish in a game that would have sold gangbusters without it, I think really makes the game special. All of the little design details, seeing the Pokemon in air quote, real life scale in the world, walking around and interacting and the fights with the other trainers and all of that stuff. It is such a joy to play. And the thing that I personally hope they carry over into the next mainline version of the game is I love being able to see the Pokemon on the overworld and not just wandering through grass hoping for an encounter or knowing that this is where this Pokemon has a chance of spawning, so I'm just going to walk through grass. I like seeing them, and I can avoid... I don't need another Pidgey. I'm going to avoid you while I hope for something useful. And I think seeing that character on the overworld is something really interesting and something that a lot of JRPGs don't do. I know Final Fantasy popularized it, at least to me, but the idea of the random battle, and that is frustrating to me when I'm just trying to get somewhere or do something. It's like, oh, battle. Okay, fine. I'm going to take another step. Battle. Okay, fine. I'll do this. I'm getting XP. It's fine. I'm grinding. It's no big deal. A battle. Okay, I don't want to battle anymore. I just want to get to my next objective. And this, because they're visible on the overworld, you can skirt around them most of the time and just go do what you want to do, or inversely, sit in an area and grind away. And my golly, it's a fantastic game. Patrick, have you played any of it? Are you a Pokemon person at all? Have you spent any time with Let's Go?
I'm not. And, you know, it's one of those game series which I would love to love, but I was a little bit older than a teenager when the first Pokemon came out, and I was like, oh, this is for children. I'm not going to play that. And I never got into it. And ever since then, it's one of those series that everyone gets excited for, and I'm sitting on the sidelines going like, guys, I don't. And so I was wondering if Pokemon Let's Go would be the one to get me in. But according to a lot of people, it's very, it's basically a simplified version of the existing Pokemons, which I tried and didn't love. So I'm waiting for the next real one on the Switch, I think. And then I'll try to get into it for real.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, if you have the time and still have a 3DS, Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon are phenomenal Pokemons, and they were cheap for Black Friday. I don't know if they're generally cheap now, but that was a real good mainline entry, but certainly waiting for whenever the next big Pokemon comes to Switch isn't a wrong idea. If you want to experience the joy of collecting pocket monsters in a more simplified, oh, my kid's coming, I can put it down at a moment's notice, Let's Go is a great game for that.
Yeah. All right. So many people have been letting me know they used to skip the VR section, but now they got VR headsets. This explosion of VR headsets over the last few weeks. So I'm excited to jump into some more VR talk. Guys, it's a great time to have a VR headset. Specifically, the PSVR headset has some amazing games right now. Patrick, I know you have been playing a couple. Where would you like to start?
We can talk about, I guess, Beat Saber. Let's leave the best for last. Although both are really good. Basically, you are, Jeff, my VR prophet. And I bought a PlayStation VR when it came out, mostly for work, and was a little bit underwhelmed. But in recent months, you've been singing its praises more than before. So I finally decided to plug it back in, even though it doesn't have the HDR pass through for my PS4 Pro. So I went through the annoyance of all of this. And I have to say, Beat Saber is really fun.
Really fun.
I think... Between this and a couple of other games, I still wouldn't say the PlayStation VR is a must-buy. But if you're interested, it's your description, you know, welcome to the dawn. Maybe it's a couple of hours before dawn. You can see the sun kind of
pre-dawn. Coming.
Yeah, and it's at least there's something to do if you have it now, which I don't think was the case a couple of years or even a year ago. Now there are substantial experiences to have. Beat Saber is one of them. It's really fun. It's even though you don't have like custom music, the existing title for everyone knows what Beat Saber is, right? it essentially rhythm game where you swing around sabers, like lightsabers, which aren't really lightsabers, to in rhythm with the music. And I didn't think I was going to love it that much, but the music is motivating, and I didn't want to stop playing. And that's not an experience I've had very often in VR. So it's really fun.
And it plays well. I haven't played it on PlayStation VR. I know that the Move controllers can be problematic sometimes. You haven't had any problems with that?
No, not really. Maybe sometimes when I have to crouch really low, the camera doesn't see the controller anymore, but yeah, it's not a huge deal. I will say, however, for this game and possibly the next one, I will talk about after you guys have talked about your things. I keep wondering how much of it, of the enjoyment, is VR, and how much of it would still be the same amount of enjoyment if it wasn't in VR. I think for Beat Saber, maybe, you know, whatever, 70-80% of it would be the same without the VR.
Really? You think that, yeah, if you were staring at a screen and trying to match your arms to the beats instead of like being in it and feeling like you're actually doing the thing, it would be the same?
No, not the same, but a certain amount. Maybe not 60%, maybe not 80%, but the game would still exist, and it would still be the rhythm thing of, you know, it wouldn't match your hands with the exact location of your hands in your visual space, but the rhythm part of it would still be there, and you would still be doing the same movements.
I mean, we have a great example of that, though, right? Like, it's called Tetris Effect, and right, it's substantially worse out of VR, and that's not even as, you know, putting you in the world as Beat Saber, right? Like, Beat Saber, because it is tracking your hands, it's putting you in the space. And Tetris Effect, you're just living in the space as you play Tetris. But I think that...
As you play Tetris in the exact same way you would play Tetris if in any other format.
That and Thumper are both, I think, great examples of the additive nature of VR for this... Otherwise, a game that literally does not need it. It plays in no different way. And I think Beat Saber, seeing the thing come to you and not seeing it on a screen that you're just kind of matching, that is farther away from you, where here it's like, oh, it's right next to me, now is when I swipe. I think something like Beat Saber would be significantly worse, with big bold around significantly. And things like Thumper and Tetris Effect are substantially worse out of VR in terms of that experience that you get from playing it in the headset. That's my opinion.
Maybe you're right. I don't know if it's your compelling argument or the striking visuals of you saying this while wearing the PlayStation VR. But yeah,
it's very comfortable.
It is.
Have you listened to DLC in VR yet? I have. It's amazing.
It's even better. Yeah, actually, most of the show is bad, but this segment is amazing in VR.
It's real good.
Let's talk about Astrobot Rescue Mission. Christian, you sent me a text yesterday, I think.
I lied. Lies.
I have the proof. I literally have the text
on my phone.
He says, this is the exact quote, Christian's text. Okay, fine. The more Astrobot I play, the more special I think it is. Geesh, fine. Are you happy now? To which I replied, very. So I know both of you guys have played Astrobot Rescue Mission. Great platformer in VR, or the greatest platformer in VR?
The greatest.
Well, the competition is not very harsh. So.
Okay, the great platformer that also happens to be in VR, or the greatest platformer that also happens to be in VR?
It's a platformer that deserves to be discussed with the greats. It does not usurp a top spot, I think, but it's like in that coffee table book, there's a chapter about Astrobot.
I agree. I think that's true. I think it is. You don't have to apologize for it in any way. It is, can stand shoulder to shoulder with any platformer you want to put up against it. And it offers something that none of them can because of VR.
So I've only played through the first two worlds and a couple of challenge missions. How much better does it get in the subsequent parts of the game?
I don't know, Christian, how far you've gotten. I finished the game and done many of the challenges. For me, the last two bosses of the game are some of the best platforming bosses I've ever played, regardless of medium. They're so fun. And the levels themselves, the last world, the fifth world, is, I think, the best of them. They save the best for last. And I think it's because they decide to just up the challenge and it becomes a much more challenging game. And the thing that's so magical about this, and I think magical about a lot of Mario games that I love and a lot of the best platformers, is new ideas are introduced throughout. It's not like you just get a bunch of ideas at the beginning and then a bunch of levels. New ideas pop up toward the end of the game. Every new world, every new level seems to have something novel and something magical in it that you didn't see coming. And there are flourishes that are constantly surprising me. And that's the way Odyssey is. That's the way Mario Galaxy was, where it's like, oh my God, I've been playing this game, you know, for many hours and many worlds in, and now they throw this at me? That's how Astrobot feels to me as well.
Okay, so keeping in mind that I've only played the first two worlds, I take your point. You know, you make that comparison to Nintendo's work a lot in this show. I would agree. I would say maybe it's not Nintendo's best work. But
if it was Nintendo's work, it wouldn't be their best, you're saying?
Right, exactly. But it's still, you know, Nintendo doesn't do bad stuff usually. It's very rare. And Astrobot is could be, I can see how it has this kind of magic, this kind of enchantment. You know, it's almost Disney-like in that sense. And you have your little character, the animations, the fact that you will have it on your controller, you bring it close to your face. That's actually something that my recent experiences have made me think about with VR. It's that it's not so much the depth of the VR that is interesting, what you see, you know, in the world around you. What's really striking is when you bring something close to you, that's something that your TV can't really create in any way. Astrobot does that a lot. It's definitely, I don't know what kind of person you would have to be to play Astrobot and not smile at least a few times during the game, right? Do not have some kind of sense of joy flew through you with this game. It is joyful. It is really well done. It's worthwhile. I'm not quite as enthusiastic as you guys. Maybe the next worlds will get me there. But it's definitely a really fun... It's a great 90s platformer game imagined for VR. It has all of the tropes, you know, the little secrets and the number of guys you have to get. And yeah, it's a good game. Between good and great, I would say. And VR
Having not finished it yet myself, but I think where it shows its brilliance in those early levels is in trying to collect all of the guys you need to rescue. And so later it starts doing things that, I don't want to say forces, but shows more creativity, perhaps even more creativity, perhaps in the get from A to B part of the game. But in those earlier levels, finding all of the little Astrobots, there are little magical moments of looking somewhere, exploring somewhere, realizing that this part of the world is way over here, using the 3D sound. I think PSVR does a really good job of simulating with the earbuds. And those moments are really, really special. It does highlight my biggest nit with the game, which is, I didn't even say problem, I said nit, and that sometimes I feel like that camera, as it moves with you, moves before I think it's going to, or too far, where I'm trying to move my little guy, because I hear the guy, and I think I can explore this space to go around a back ledge to get him. There isn't a back ledge, and I'm like, oh, I'll go back to this other way. Well, crap, I can't get back there. That's my only nit, but exploring the spaces is really fun.
Well, you can't turn around and look back and bring your guy there.
Yeah, sometimes, but your pedestal that you're floating robot head in the world in, at least for me, blocks that a few times, where it's easier for me to reload than not, and that's unfortunate. But again, minor critique.
Yeah, no, I agree. There are a couple of moments where the challenge is not moving the camera forward because you can't move it back. But yes, very, very rare. Patrick, I can't wait for you to play some of the later levels. Some of the things that it gives you as far as what your controller turns into and allows you to do are just delightful. Anytime you step on what I call the magic carpet, which is like the little the pad that he gets on that takes you to a new part of the level. Anytime you step on that in this game is like the happiest moment, because I know the game's about to show me something really cool. There's like a roller coaster moment that's like straight out of Sonic the Hedgehog. It has so much waiting for you. Every level has got a cool idea in it. It's so good.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And I will say, these past few weeks have made me change my tune a little bit about VR. I was underwhelmed. I will say, if PlayStation 5 has a new version of the PlayStation VR that launches at the same time, and that doesn't require 15 million different cables. You know, you can, even if it does require a cable, you just plug one in and you're done. I think it could be a really compelling piece of hardware, which I wouldn't have thought, you know, even 6 months ago. So things are happening.
Yeah. Well, I'm very encouraged. I feel like, Sony understands that this is a viable platform, and I'm really hoping that there's an Astrobots 2 and that they continue to, you know, build with these great titles and this great momentum they've got over the last month. Christian, have you had a chance to try Evasion yet?
I have not. Just on VR General, just real quick before you move to Evasion. I know game development is hard and difficult, but I think that had Astrobot been Lucky's Tale and launched with Oculus, you know, like, had Lucky's Tale been to Astrobot's quality, I think the conversation around VR would have been pretty different over the last few years.
I really enjoyed Lucky's Tale,
but
it is just a platformer in VR, and Astrobot feels like a platformer made for VR.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Astrobot is a good game regardless. As you said, you know, it deserves to be in the conversation with other games, whether or not you're talking about VR.
Well, I think the fact that they made Lucky's Tale 2 out of VR is all you need to know about how essential that was for Lucky's Tale as the franchise. But we can talk about Evasion in a later week. It's really cool. It's basically a first-person shooter / bullet hell shooter, which I've never quite seen anybody do before. And that alone is pretty compelling and interesting. We'll talk about it because I know, Christian, you'll be able to play it.
I wanted to play it. I will just say that Tetris Effect is devious in that you don't stop when you clear a level. You don't go back to the map. It's just like you transition and you're like, oh, I guess I'm still on that same level. Cut to 2 hours later and you beat the game. You know, it's sneaky.
It's so good. All right. So now we're going to go to a conversation that I had for Tabletop Time with John Perkis from Actual Lol. But first, let me tell you about our final sponsor, which is Hims. You know, too often, there are things as guys that happen to our bodies that we are embarrassed about. We don't really want to go to the doctor and talk about. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. And when you start to notice hair loss, oftentimes it's already too late. But, you know, also erectile dysfunction is a real thing and affects people. And there are a lot of kind of nefarious online scams that can be around that try to mislead you. It's good to be able to have a place that maybe you can avoid the embarrassment of or the discomfort of having to make an appointment and go in and talk to a real person in person, but also is legitimate and not snake oil, not a skeevy place. These are prescription solutions backed by science. This is Hims. This is a place built to alleviate that problem of maybe not getting the thing treated that you want treated because you keep putting it off. Because you're a guy like me, I put things off when they're uncomfortable to me. You don't want to turn to a weird solution or do nothing when you can actually get real medicine to help you. And forhims.com is the one-stop shop for hair loss, for sexual wellness, and skincare for men. Christian knows this. I was just telling him that I've recently started doing something I should have done years ago. I knew I should have done it years ago, but it's exactly this problem. I put it off. I should have been taking care of my skin. I should have been moisturizing. I should have been doing all those things, but I'm a dumb dude who just doesn't want to deal with that, and I'm lazy, and I don't want to think about it. Hims is a place for all that stuff. you can go and you can get the things you need from a real prescription. Hims connects you with real doctors with medical grade solutions to treat these things, to treat hair loss. It's great. And if you order now, our listeners, DLC listeners, can get a trial month of Hims for just $5 right now, today, while supplies last. You see the website for details, but this would cost you hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to forhims.com/DLC. That's forhims.com/DLC. forhims.com/DLC. Time for some tabletop time, and I am very excited. It's the holidays. We're getting ready to put our lists together of things we might want to, under the tree or wrapped in packages or maybe to give to others. And I am very pleased because I have an awesome guest to help me finalize my list, maybe help you finalize your list of things you might want to ask for and or give and or play this holiday season. And that is John Perkis from Actual Lol, one of my favorite board gaming personalities, one of my favorite board gaming channels on YouTube, Actual Lol. If you're not subscribed, you should be. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm such a fan of your passion and excitement around board games. And I have to admit, since I've had my second child, I have not played as many of the new hotness lately. And I wanted to have you on specifically to maybe catch me up and catch my audience up on some stuff that's happened fairly recently that people might want to know about, might want to pick up this holiday season or play. And I know that you came equipped with an awesome list of games to recommend to the audience. I'm very excited to dig in. Chiefly among them is a game that's already on my list. I have literally asked for this from my family. Nice. And that is Chronicles of Crime. I'm so excited about this game.
Yes, it's different, and it's bringing technology to board games, which we've had a little bit, but this one's kind of doing it in a different way. And I know that you love VR. Right. And so it's bringing VR to board games, although I don't get too excited on that front. If you play the game for about an hour, you'll probably be doing VR in the game for maybe 5 minutes. But it's definitely it doesn't outstay its welcome. And they use the VR in this crime game to put you in the crime scene. So maybe someone's been killed. You're going to the murder scene, and then somebody uses their phone as a VR headset. It comes with these glasses, and you look around and you're shouting out to your teammates about the evidence that you see at the scene. So if you see the murder weapon or just some documents or someone's phone, you're shouting that out, and then they're trying to find the cards that match that, because then when you effectively go back and discuss it all, you've got that information there that you can then scan with the app. So the game is very much focused around this app, and everything's got a QR code on, and you'll be scanning things to ask the game questions, really, about what you found. And then you'll be getting information back. And so it's quite non-linear in that aspect. There is a crime-solving game called Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, which has really inspired this, and I love that game. And this one's doing a very similar thing, but the thing that it adds to the genre is that you can decide what questions to ask of people. You don't just go to a place and get like a cut scene where they do their talking. You don't get the information unless you ask the right questions. So if I go and speak to somebody that was a witness at the scene, I need to ask them about that bit of evidence that I saw in the VR headset. And if I didn't see that bit of evidence, then I can't ask them that question. And I need to ask them about the other people involved in the case. And as it expands, there's just more and more things that you can ask. And it's really fun.
I own Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. I like that game a lot, but I have to admit that with certain people, it can come off, I think, a little dry, mm-hmm. a little cerebral mm-hmm. and slow.
Yeah.
And this game seems to address that in a lot of ways, one of which is the sort of VR app. But it also feels like because you're scanning things, because the game sort of adapts to how you play it, it isn't relying so much on, you know, reading through tons of text and ferreting out clues, right?
Yeah, that's definitely a flaw with Sherlock, or something that a lot of people don't like, is that you've got to do a lot of reading. And Chronicles definitely cuts down on that. It tends to dwell less on Sherlock likes to read a bit like a novel. So it has a lot of flourishes and a lot of padding. And Chronicles, because it's on an app, it keeps the text very simple. So you're pretty much only getting the facts. And there's a bit of taste there. I like the Sherlock style. Chronicles is just really straight to the point. And the writing, I would say, is not as good, but in terms of the theme that it carries. But yeah, it definitely gets you just getting the information. And I think people that might have found Sherlock a bit boring are going to be a bit more in with Chronicles. The only downside is that it is all happening on that app on your phone. So you're sort of deciding, are you going to share the phone, like hand it between you? That's kind of what we do. I tend to just play this with my girlfriend. I think it works really well as a two-player game. It could even work as a solo game. And if you're playing with maybe four people, it's like, are you just going to pass the phone around so you all take turns to scan QR codes? But actually scanning QR codes isn't that much fun. Really, the fun is obviously the discussion and the learning, the information and stuff.
Right. Well, you have another detective game on your list as well, another crime-solving game. It's actually called Detective, right? A modern crime game?
Yeah, I mean, it feels a bit weird to be talking about two games that are so similar, but this is the other side of it. If Chronicles of Crime is an entry-level game that I could honestly recommend to almost anyone, the rules are like two pages, and then you're straight in. As long as you know how to use a mobile phone app, you're playing. With Detective, it's not that the rules are any more complicated, but the cases are more involved. And so you're going to be playing maybe for 3 hours per case. And the stories are that bit more richer and harder to untangle. And what the cool twist about this game, and I guess this is the thing, is you've got to find a twist that elevates it above Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, is that it has real world information in terms of solving the case. So it will give you points at which it will give you something, and then it's effectively just asking you to go away and search on the internet. And so you might be looking on Wikipedia. There are times when you're using Google Maps to kind of look at locations, what's closest to each other, or just to kind of research. It's set in a town in the States that I can't remember, but it uses the map of that town. And then I don't want to give too much away, but it uses the distances and things like that. And then you'll be looking up local information. And the first one goes back historically. So the first case is using information from World War II. And so you're actually learning stuff whilst you're playing the game about these fascinating stuff about World War II. And
it's like an ARG.
Yeah, it's just so different, and it really immerses you because you really feel like a detective, and you've got all these different notes that you've taken laid out on the table, along with a bunch of cards that the game has given you. And then you've also got your laptop, because not only are you searching on Google, but the game has a police database. So you go through, you might have like an interrogation with a witness or a suspect, and you're reading that interview. And it's long, and that's what's happening on the laptop. Another thing that they do is that they give you the stress levels of the character when they're being interrogated, which reminds me of the game L.A. Noire. It's not something that they use a lot, but there will be expansions to this game. And it's just another cool twist that you've just never seen in any other board game, and really immerses you, makes you feel like you're a detective. And so when you're having those discussions, it's the same with Sherlock, it's the same with Chronicles. You are having discussions about, why do you think someone did something? You're talking about real world actions and motives, and you're using your own knowledge of life and people. And I just love that, because it's doing exactly what it's trying to do, which is make you feel like a detective. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not gaming the game. You're actually playing out, you're role playing as what the character might be doing. Yeah. It's super cool. You brought up a relationship of that game to a video game. I notice another game on your list that I think probably in a lot of people's minds would be related to one of the biggest games of the year, Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yeah.
Because you have Western Legends here, which is sort of trying to do the same thing that a big open world Western role-playing game would do, except on the table.
Absolutely. And that's why I put it on the list. I've been playing Red Dead Redemption just as much as everyone else. And I've been listening to the podcast. You guys have obviously been talking about it a lot. And yeah, I don't know if they've ever explicitly said that it's trying to be Red Dead. I don't know if you can get away with that, but this is really the intent behind the game, is that it's a sandbox board game, which is rare for a board game. There's only a few of them around. They're incredibly hard to pull off. And you play as a character and you can choose what you do. So you can go and play poker to make money. You can go to the general store to buy a new horse or to upgrade your weapons. You can rob a bank. You can prospect for gold. You can rustle cattle. And you can decide whether you want to be a good guy or a bad guy. So you can, there's an outlaw track and a marshal track. And so if you do bad things in the game, like rustle cattle or rob other players, then you'll go further up this outlaw track. That's going to get you loads of points. But then that gives the opportunity for the other players to play marshal to try and arrest you. And that's going to move them up the marshal track. And when you get arrested, you lose all of your credentials because you're no longer cool anymore. You got arrested. And so that those points that you were getting every turn, you're no longer getting. So there's even is thematic in the sense of like being a bad guy is hard. And whereas being a good guy in this game is kind of a bit more safe, a bit more secure. And yeah, you can do what you want. There's loads of different ways to get points, and you tell a different story every time. You play a different character that's based on a classic Wild West character. They will give you a bit of a lean in terms of the direction, the way you start the game. And it isn't a natural storytelling game in the sense you don't read loads and loads of text, but you really tell a story in the interactions you have. It's a very interactive game. So you have to like attacking other players effectively. So you've got to be prepared to lose all of your money because you got robbed by someone, or prepared to lose all of your wanted level because, you know, somebody arrested you. But I love games like that. And it does it really well. It's also quite a simplistic system. So there's two other sandbox games that are very famous called Merchants and Marauders and Zaya Legends of Idris System. And Merchants and Marauders is great. It's a pirate game, but the rules are complex. Western Legends is surprisingly simple. The game is like long. It will play 2 to 3 hours, but it's not that hard to get into because everything happens with these poker cards that you have. They do pretty much all the actions in the game. So if you get into a fight, it's basically who's got the best poker card. If you play poker, it's obviously who's got the best poker cards. And if you there's other actions in the game, it comes down to those cards, but they are multi-use. They also have actions on that can do other things. And it's that decision as to how you best use your hand is really how the game goes.
It's so cool. It seems like such a thematic, interesting way to do it.
Yes.
I'm dying to try this one. And I think sandbox is such a difficult thing to pull off well. But I'm so curious to play at it. Again, that's called Western Legends. All right. What else you got on your list?
So I wanted to talk about a bunch of different games. Western Legends is a bit heavier. Detective's kind of heavier. Chronicles is entry level. So if you're looking for more of a family game, then there's one that's just come out, which is very appealing, I think, for Christmas. It's called Men at Work. This is a dexterity game. So we're thinking like Jenga, and it's from the company Pretzel Games that made Junk Art, which I think you talked about on the podcast a while back. That's my favorite dexterity game. It's absolutely incredible. And Men at Work has got a really cool theme where you are building a construction site. So it has these amazing meeples, these little wooden guys with plastic hard hats, and a bunch of big wooden sticks that represent girders. You've got these tiny little bricks, and on your turn, you're just having to add to this construction site and try to balance things. So it's a stacking game. And if things fall off on your turn, you lose a safety certificate. So you make a mistake, you get punished for it. You might lose the game. But what you're also trying to do, which is kind of pushing you in the other direction, is to place the highest piece on the construction site. So that will win you the Employee of the Month award. And so every time...
Sort of like inverse Jenga. It's the opposite of Jenga, right? Jenga, you're taking pieces away.
Yes.
In this game, you're adding pieces.
Yeah, exactly. And the game is telling you what to do each round. So you don't get to choose. You can't just pick whatever you want. So you'll flip a card and it might tell you to put a worker in, or it might tell you to add a girder to the site. And then when you add that thing, what you're trying to do is make it so it reaches the highest point in the whole construction without anything falling off. And it's so difficult, but it pushes you to take those risks. And then of course it creates those big moments where everything collapses. It's just, it's a lot of fun and it looks incredible. Just like Junk Art, it's not necessarily like my favorite dexterity game in the world, but it has such a cool, funny theme and is so appealing to look at that I think it just kind of sells itself in that respect.
I had so much fun with Meeple Circus recently, which is sort of a similar idea, but that is your own little tableau that's just yours. And this shared idea, I think, even adds another layer of,
yes, that's of zany. That's what I love about it, is having to kind of work together. Yeah. And everything's falling down and you can screw up the next person because you make the tower so impossibly imbalanced that then when they place their piece, they're going to have to fail. Yeah.
I also noticed you put a word game on here. I love word games. And I think this is a newer word game called Word Slam.
Yes. I'm a huge fan of party games. I cover a lot of them on my channel. And Word Slam is one of my favorites. I know that you've talked a lot about Codenames, and Codenames is an absolute modern classic of a party game. Word Slam is in that similar genre of trying to get your team to guess something. So you're playing on two teams, and they can be as big as you like, really. One person on each team is trying to get their team to guess something, so they're assigned the same thing. So it might be a word or a phrase, for example, like Jurassic Park or Justin Bieber or whatever, and the way they're having to describe that thing is by using these simplistic words. So a deck of nouns, verbs, and adjectives. So it's just describing stuff. So like big, small, there's colors in there, old, and it's simple things like technology. So it's kind of obtuse, the words that you get to use. You'll never get the words that you want. And so you're having to combine them together. So for Jurassic Park, they're not going to have the word dinosaur, but maybe they'll have like old, animal, big, or something. And then, of course, your team are just shouting out answers, trying to guess. What's really funny is that because you're both guessing the same thing, you can hear the other team guessing. And so even if your clue giver is giving you terrible clues, you can hear what the other team are guessing, and that's going to lead you in a direction. And you're racing to get there first. So there's a real tension. Codenames can be quite thinky. It can also be a little bit quiet as you're waiting for your clue to be given. Word Slam is a lot more stressful and louder and frantic, and I really love that energy. So I think it's a really great one to be playing at Christmas, because anyone can play it, really. And they also just released Word Slam Family, which is basically the same thing, but like a smaller box and a cheaper version. So depending on which one you want to get, they're both great.
Fantastic. Clank is a game that I've known about for a while. It's not super new, but I know that there's a new expansion for Clank, and you're a big fan of that game, right?
Yeah, I think Clank is just one that I wanted to highlight again, because it's just different and fun. And I was trying to think of what would be great for a video game audience, and I don't know what criteria I was using, but Clank just seemed to fit that. So the theme is that you're racing into a dungeon to steal treasure. And what's cool is the way the game plays really makes you feel that theme in a way that a lot of card games don't. And Clank is a deck building card game. So this is inspired originally by a game called Dominion. And the way deck building games work is that you're buying cards to improve your deck. And so every turn, you're going to be flipping over cards from your deck and hoping that you get those new great cards, trying to keep building and building to get better and better. And in Clank, you're using those cards to move through this dungeon as fast as possible and to steal this treasure from the dragon. The longer you spend in the dungeon, though, there's kind of a push your luck aspect. You're going to make noise, or what the game calls clank, and add these cubes to this bag. So when the dragon attacks, you'll be drawing cubes out, and it might be you, it might be another player, and you will lose health based on who the dragon attacks. So you can really gamble. You can make loads and loads of noise, be really fast and loose with your robbing, and the dragon might never get you. So because of what cubes come out, of course, it's much more likely to happen. You can also race into the dungeon and just run straight out again. And that will expedite the dragon attacking all the other players. So there's a real risk and reward thing. The further you go into the dungeon, the better the treasure you'll get, but you're way more likely to never get out alive. And so again, just like Western Legends tells a really fun story, but with a relatively simple gameplay system. And that's just why I love it. And yeah, there are loads of expansions. This is a really popular game. So if you get into Clank, you can have different maps, different, adding in loads of different cards. It's just, it's endless, really.
And I think I've been mispronouncing it because it does have an exclamation point. So I think I should be saying Clank.
Yeah.
Something along
exactly, those
lines.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then you also have a couple of real time games. Mm. I love real time games because they're frenetic and crazy and zany and stressful in all the best ways. Tell me about those.
Yeah. So, A Tale of Pirates and Kitchen Rush. They're not really related except that they both are real-time games and they both used sand timers in a really cool way. They both came out last year and I fell in love with both of them. And it's weird because you would expect normally in the kind of reviewer world to say that you like one more than the other and have to kind of choose your favorite child or whatever. I just like both of them. They both do things slightly differently, but you're placing your sand timers down as workers. So to do an action, and Tale of Pirates is set on a pirate ship and Kitchen Rush is set in a kitchen running a restaurant, you are placing a sand timer and you can't move that worker again until the sand timer's run out. So you're having to wait for it to do its thing. And then you're worrying about maybe another sand timer that you can place. And A Tale of Pirates, you're working cooperatively on this pirate ship. So you're placing your sand timer to raise the sails so you can move faster, to change the direction of your ship, to fire the cannons at enemy ships, to use the crow's nest to look at threats from other ships and stuff. And it's great for teamwork, that one, because you start off the game with only one sand timer. So whilst that sand timer's going down, you really have to discuss with the other players, what are you going to do next? Because if you choose the wrong thing and you don't work together, if you raise the sail when the other player wanted to actually move the ship, then it's not going to work. The ship is going too fast to be able to change direction. And there's just, you really have to collaborate and coordinate. And it comes with this incredible 3D pirate ship. And it just looks amazing on the table. Kitchen Rush is the best way to describe it, is that it's Overcooked, the board game. And,
right.
And it's just like Overcooked in the sense that it's chaotic and frantic and you're having to do all the things. You're having to get the ingredients and put it in the oven and then serve it up to the tables. And you're getting in each other's way because I'm trying to cook my dish while someone else is trying to get the ingredients that I want. And it really captures that frantic feel of trying to run a restaurant. And that's what I love about both of them, really, is that they feel thematic. And because they're real-time cooperative games, you're stressed out the whole time. That's kind of the thing. But you feel completely immersed the whole time. And everything you do makes sense in that theme. And I just really love games like that, that make you feel part of the world that they're trying to create.
Man, this has been such a fantastic list. I will go through the games again to refresh people's minds. Chronicles of Crime, Detective, a modern crime game, Western Legends, Word Slam, Men at Work, Clank, and then A Tale of Pirates and Kitchen Rush. Awesome, awesome, awesome list. So many things that I want to put on my Christmas list, my holiday wish list. But you know, I have to say that by far the most common question I get from people about tabletop games is, can you give me some recommendations of games that are good for two players? Oftentimes people are like, hey, my significant other and I would like to play something together. We don't often have an opportunity to get more than just the two of us. What are great two-player games? And I have my stable of two-player games that I refer recommend to people over and over and over again. But I'd love to hear how you would answer that question.
Yeah, I love couples games as well. That's kind of how I got into it. And I play a lot with my girlfriend. And I've made a whole bunch of videos on the topic. I think when I... when somebody asks me that question, my mind always goes to Onitama, which is such a simple game. It's a two-player abstract game that is inspired by chess, but don't be necessarily scared or put off by that. It plays in sort of 10, 15 minutes. You have five pieces on either side. You're playing against each other. And the way you control these pieces is with cards. So a card will tell you that you can move maybe up, down, left, right, or diagonal in both direction. When you make a movement, you spend that card and it goes to the other player. And then one of their cards will come to you. So these cards are always rotating. So there's only ever five moves that you can do in the whole game. And so you're planning ahead by looking at the cards that will be available to you. If I play that card now, then I won't be able to move my piece diagonally next turn. And then I'm in a position where they're going to get that card and they're going to be able to take my piece. Just like in chess, you're taking pieces, or you can win by getting your king piece to the other side of to their home space. It looks incredible. So I always see it as a really great gift for couples or to buy for your partner, because it comes with these, I don't even know what they're made of, but they've just got these wonderful figurines and this amazing neoprene playmat. And it just couldn't be simpler, but with plenty to think about and loads of replayability, because every time you play, there's going to be a different set of cards. So a different puzzle to work out how best to, when to play these cards and what to watch out for.
Again, that's called Onitama, O-N-I-T-A-M-A. And I'll have all these games also in the show notes if you want to refer to them. John, this has been phenomenal. I love chatting with you. I love watching your videos. I love your enthusiasm for board games. And I'm so pleased that you made the time to do this. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It was great. I love to have the opportunity to just talk about board games and get them out into the world. That's kind of the thing. So yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor.
Well, we'll do this again sometime. I appreciate it. And happy holidays.
Yeah, and you. Happy holidays.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have our parting gifts coming up, so stick around for that. But Patrick Beja, thank you so much for being here. You're so much fun. I wish we could do this more often.
I wish we could as well, but sadly, I live far away.
You do.
You live the Earth is round. If only the Earth was flat, Jeff.
If only. I look at your Instagram pictures and I think you live in paradise, though. Does it feel like paradise as you live there?
Well, until a couple of weeks ago, when now it's eternal darkness, it was. Now a little bit less.
Good game, though. Good game.
Well, you know, it was nice while it lasted, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's lovely. I live in the Finnish countryside, and it's such an amazing place to live and to raise a child. I love it. We made the jump from the city a few months ago, and we've been very happy.
That's wonderful. Well, I love your shows. I think I'm going to be on Pixels soon. You and I have been talking about that. But tell people all the different things that you do and where they can find you.
Oh, wow. So many things. So first of all, Pixels is a show about games, as you mentioned. And if you enjoy this show, you probably would enjoy Pixels as well. If you speak French, you might want to listen to Le Rendez-vous Tech, which is a show about tech, as the name implies. So go check out Le Rendez-vous Tech. And if you enjoy different opinions, you might want to listen to the Phileas Club, which is a show where I get people from different parts of the world, different cultures, different backgrounds, and we talk about the news and try to listen to one another and to understand what other people think. And we've been doing that for a while and it's working out pretty well. If you want to, I'm not going to spell out the name of that show, just go to frenchspin.com and you'll find the links from there. frenchspin.com.
Very, very cool. I love all the stuff you do, man. It's awesome. Christian Spicer, what do you got coming up this week?
Well, I'll be in the Wild West, as discussed. That's where I will be this week. But people listening, there's still time to go to cottonbureau.com, search for Play Games Be Nice, and you can get your summer game, but good for any time of the year. There it is on the chat. Shirt. And they still say there's a good chance they'll show up by Christmas if that's what you're trying to do for U.S. customers. But the proceeds go to St. Jude, and they help kids beat cancer. So you look good, feel good. cottonbureau.com, and then search for Play Games Be Nice. Then you can follow me on Twitter at Spicer, Instagram Christian_Spicer. And this show, except for when I'm out of town, I live stream on my Twitch channel, which is twitch.tv/Christian Spicer.
I have a couple of podcasts for you to listen to. The Slash Filmcast, where we talk about movies and TV shows, is over at slashfilmcast.com. And I also, you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata with two N's and one T. If you want to email the show, it's dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your feedback. Any questions or comments you might have, all welcome there. And the subreddit over at 5by5dlc.reddit.com. All right, let us do our parting gift and wrap the show up now. Hey, give us a suggestion. Patrick, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I would have a million, but I'll just limit myself to two. Very quick one, super fun. Cobra Kai is a great show. Have you seen it, Jeff?
I've watched the first three episodes, but I have not.
Oh my God, that. you weren't wrapped enough into the magic of Karate Kid to continue it. Okay, well, obviously you have very poor taste, but and Christian as well, because he only watched the first two and didn't want to pay for YouTube Premium to watch the rest. It's a great show. What's really magical about it is that it casts the two main characters, or the bad guy and the good guy, from Karate Kid, and it also has a parallel storyline with the kids from today, and they kind of look at the old guys. So the old guys act like people were written back when Karate Kid first aired, and the new guys look at them and think, this is kind of weird the way you're considering things, and the way, like, it's confronting the two generations. But for us, having known Karate Kid back then, we are used to that. And we're also in today's world and thinking, well, maybe it's not so, you know, appropriate to say things like this. Or super well written. I really recommend it. The second
Cobra
thing,
Kai, that's on YouTube. Go ahead.
Yes, Cobra Kai on YouTube. And apparently they're going to, as we were discussing with Christian before the show started, it's going to go free, supported with ads very soon. So it will be available for everyone. Second thing is 21 Lessons for the 21st Century, which is a book written by Yuval Noah Harari, who you might have heard about for his very famous book, Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind. And he speaks about all of the changes that we have been going through as a world and societies, and what is going to happen in the next few decades. Really interesting. I don't agree with everything he says, but he looks at things and explains things that have been happening that have been puzzling us. And the way he frames the events from the past few years is super interesting, and he brings perspective to some of the things that we think might be devastating, and points out other things that we don't think about so much. Really fascinating guy. 21 Lessons for the 21st Century is a really good book I would recommend.
Awesome. I would love to check that out. Christian, what about you?
Mine is also a book. I might have mentioned it earlier when I started it. I got it from the library and wasn't able to finish it. And then I had to take it back, and it hasn't been available again. But Star Wars Bloodline by Claudia Gray, and it kind of bridges the gap about what happens after the good guys win in Star Wars, and then in Episode 7 when the good guys have not won again. But a friend and people listen to the show probably know, Nicole Z, let me borrow her copy. Friend and fellow Star Wars enthusiast, let me borrow her copy, so I'm not bound by the strict return periods of the library, and I can keep it as long as Nicole Z keeps me as a friend. but it's a fantastic
book. You could keep it forever. I mean, you don't have to return it to her.
That's true. The book is probably more valuable than my friendship with her. So the cost of my book is $124.99 hardback. But I like Claudia Gray's writing. I really enjoy this book. Again, maybe being a little over halfway through it right now, but kind of dealing into the nitty gritty and the politics of the Star Wars universe and explaining about why things kind of went south and what happened in a supposed paradise, right? Coming out of the last original Star Wars after Return of the Jedi. And you see that it's hard to keep everybody happy. And if you haven't read it, I'd recommend picking it up. Star Wars Bloodline by Claudia Gray.
We've got a listener suggested parting gift. This comes to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Michael from Patchogue, New York. Is that right? Did I say that completely wrong? Patchogue? Anybody heard of that place in New York?
Oh, anyway. Patch of Goo. Yeah, I've been there.
He's sending this to us from a patch of goo in New York, which honestly is all of New York. Anyway. Sorry, Michael. Michael, so nice to send this in. He says, this week we had the unfortunate passing of Steven Hillenburg, the creator of SpongeBob SquarePants. For many kids who have grown up in the past few generations, including my own, his impact on our childhood could be compared to that of Stan Lee himself. With that, I'd like to recommend the first three seasons of SpongeBob. There's great stuff throughout the show's long history, but that first three seasons stick out to me as particularly great and having lasting appeal for kids and adults alike. Three episodes I would recommend in particular are Ripped Pants, Pizza Delivery, and Chocolate with Nuts. Thank you, Michael. That is a lovely suggestion. I was never a SpongeBob guy. I think I was aged out of it, but I recognize it as being a big cultural touchstone and one that is beloved. So yeah, very cool. I was sad to hear of that passing as well. My parting gift is a movie. Probably doesn't need me to recommend it, but if there's any chance that you're not going to see Creed 2 this weekend or soon in movie theaters, rectify that immediately. It is great. The first Creed, also great. If you haven't watched that, watch that. Then go see Creed 2, because it's perfect. It builds upon everything. It calls back to everything that you would want it to in the first movie. It also is this magical thing where things that happened 30 years ago have meaning now. It's an incredible time we are in movies. That didn't really exist before now, where a generation passes and movies actually have weight. Like when a character in the Creed movies looks at a picture that's hanging in a restaurant, and that picture is from a movie that happened 30 years ago, and you know what happened in that from that picture, and they go and they relate to it because they're 30 years older, and it's just cool. That is cool. And the movie's very well done. Michael B. Jordan is awesome and ripped.
You know, it's the great sentence diagram, right? It's is Michael B. Jordan in it? Is it called Fantastic Four? If no, go see it. Like that's right. All you need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's if true. It is that's true about Fantastic
Four. One, I was amazed by how good, you know, essentially Rocky 15 was.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. And Stallone's great in it. It manages to actually make Ivan Drago a three-dimensional character instead of a cartoon character from Rocky IV.
Oh, I can't.
It's really good. It's really good. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Patrick Beja and Christian Spice for hanging out with me. Thanks to all the folks in our chat rooms for hanging out with all of us in real time, even though it was a little earlier today. We really appreciate you guys being there, making the show better in real time. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for making those cool bumpers. Thanks to John Perkis for being here as well. And thank you to you for listening. We appreciate you downloading the show. We'll be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.